You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So glad you could be with us. A major topic across the globe, not just now, but certainly for many, many years, that it's really caught a lot of people's attention is the issue regarding sex trafficking, especially as it relates to young people, young girls, not just exclusively to young women, but certainly they are a primary target of sex traffickers. But where do these events take place? How does this all happen? And with the with the beginning, in fact, the end of this month, the end of November, toward the end of November, the World Cup will be running in various locations across the globe. Many are concerned that this may indeed be a cover for sex traffickers who are trying to recruit or to bring people into the fold, as they say. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Greg Mitchell. He's the associate professor at Williams College and the author of the new book, Panics Without Borders, How Global Sporting Events Drives Myths About Sex Trafficking. And he's done a lot of research, so I've asked Greg to join me this evening and talk about what I think is certainly a very important issue, and one, as I said, is certainly growing. Hey, Greg, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
This had to catch your attention as well. I mean, you know, I always ask this of authors, what was it that inspired you? I mean, you know, a lot of time and energy, research and writing the book, getting it published. What was it about the issue of sex trafficking that caught your attention?
So I had already been working in Brazil, primarily in Rio de Janeiro, since 2006 when I started working there as a graduate student. And by about 2012, as I was wrapping up work on my first book, which was about male sex workers and their foreign clients and the very complicated kinds of relationships they formed. That book was called Tourist Attractions. As I was wrapping that up in about the early 2010s, at that point, we all knew that Brazil had been selected to host the World Cup, and also that Rio, 2 years later, would be hosting the Summer Olympics. And so what almost immediately began to happen all around me was that there was a lot of media hype around the idea of sexual exploitation or sex trafficking, kidnapping of children, et cetera. But we weren't really seeing that. What I was finding all around me was that the police were beginning to do raids on brothels, trying to clean things up before the journalists and the fans and everyone arrived. And part of that cleanup meant that the police were really abusing the sex workers there. And so they were beating them and sometimes sexually assaulting them. And as this began to increase, I began to think about how other host countries, recent ones and also upcoming ones, were handling this. And so that began many years of traveling to Russia and Doha and London and back, of course, to Brazil and various host countries. South Africa was in there as well, to really look at how this pattern was repeating over and over, that we think there's going to be a big increase in trafficking and exploitation. And I should also hasten to add, there absolutely is sexual exploitation in the sex industry. But what was interesting to me is that we really didn't see the violence coming from traffickers or pimps or even clients. It was very much coming from the police. And that was true in Russia and South Africa, even in London. And that was the beginning of this adventure of writing this book.
Greg, that's even more frightening because, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm getting the drift here, you get these big sporting events, and you mentioned Brazil, and I know the World Cup is huge down there, and they do pull tremendous crowds from all ages. So they, the police who you hope you put your trust and faith in to help you, to provide safety and security for you, they round up what could be targets for sex traffickers, only to be the ones that really do more harm than anyone else. Is this a global phenomenon?
It is. So the first of the World Cup sites that I went to was related to the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. And there we saw kind of a strange coalition, really, of evangelical Christian missionary groups who were very concerned with stopping not just sex trafficking, but all prostitution, as well as certain anti-prostitution feminist groups, as well as business developers, policy makers, politicians, that sort of thing. And everybody has their particular agenda around this idea. But I think what a lot of the foreign groups did not realize is that in many of these places, such as South Africa, such as Brazil, the police really are not there to protect vulnerable and marginalized populations. So in South Africa, the police grow out of the apartheid system historically. They're certainly not there to protect black and brown women. They're there to protect elites and do the bidding of the state. So unfortunately, what I find is that there's often not a lot of cultural competence coming from these foreign groups. And so they come in and they have the best of intentions and they say, oh, yes, we should have a task force and we should definitely clean up all of these horrible red light districts. And, you know, and the city wants to develop that property typically and, you know, put their stadiums and facilities and there, so they want to clear the women out. And what a lot of the foreign groups don't realize is that that can be pretty violent in reality. So they kind of mistakenly think they're doing a human rights intervention, but they're causing really more harm than good. And there's not even the actual trafficking happening around the events. So the sex workers kind of become collateral damage when these events happen, and often, frankly, are very disappointed because they have the idea that they're going to make a lot of money, and then they don't. So that's another recurring theme that I saw in South Africa, in Brazil, in Russia, certainly.
I was thinking, this is how I'm starting to draw my own conclusions, and I just want to make sure that I'm not going off base here. After reading the book and also listening to you this evening, you get a bunch of young people, vulnerable, maybe homeless, maybe, you know, runaways, not highly educated, certainly have probably very little in the way of any kind of assets. So they're desperate. You know, we've seen it in our own cities. We see it in our own backyards, in our own neighborhoods. So it's not unfounded by any means. But in this event, in this circumstance, I should say, you see these innocent people, vulnerable people, more so, being, you know, chattel, being folk, you know, these people, these sex traffickers, taking full advantage of them. But you've got, as you said, government. You've got organizations that do a lot of talking but don't do a lot of action. You've got police, law enforcement that you hope would be the first line of defense. That doesn't always work that way. So I guess what my question is, this is a big money-making machine, Greg, is it not? And everybody...
Absolutely.
And everybody stands to benefit. So what are the chances that this really ever gets brought under control?
Well, one of the problems is that before all of these events, there's very often some kind of a blue ribbon task force that is consists of politicians and public health folks and various stakeholders, as they say, that are really looking at these issues. So when I was in London, that meant that there were people from the mayor's office, who is in Boris Johnson, and people from Scotland Yard and people from the National Health Service. And what was interesting is that there was a very stark divide between the people who, frankly, were using it to bolster their careers, who were, you know, getting a lot of money to do advertising and consulting. And then you had the people who were running shelters and who were working with both consensual sex workers and also sex trafficking victims. And there was a lot of conflict between these two sort of ideologies, one representing the idea that one should move toward harm reduction. So if the person needs a bed, they get a bed. If they need a clean needle, they get a clean needle. If they need an exit strategy from the sex industry, then that's what they get, as opposed to a lot of the anti-prostitution side that says we just need to obliterate all prostitution and just, you know, try to shut everything down. And those two sides have a lot of difficulties. But what really struck me is that there were no sex workers included on that task force. There was nobody there talking about how these policies were actually going to play out, because a lot of this could have been foreseen. And also, when it comes to stopping trafficking and exploitation, we know that peer outreach and peer education are much, much more effective than, you know, if I go to a brothel in the Global South and bring my students and we have clipboards and we begin to try to hand out pamphlets and educate people, they don't want to hear from us. But when you have sex workers doing the work and talking to one another and warning one another and so forth, we know that that's effective, but very often they're just not allowed a seat at the table.
Yeah. It's frightening just listening to this. So I can only imagine the terror and the horror that goes through the minds of those who are exploited. I want to take a quick pause and remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Vone, your host. My guest this week is author and educator Greg Mitchell. His new book is Panics Without Borders, and we're talking about the proliferation across the globe of sex trafficking, specifically, Greg in his book has touched upon events such as World Cup, drawing basically hundreds of thousands of people to these major sporting events, but they also create an atmosphere for sex traffickers to lure women, girls, young people. It really doesn't matter. And Greg, that's where the next question comes from. As I was listening to you, I'm thinking, okay, boy, so nice to live here in the United States. We don't have those kind of issues. I'm thinking this is only, you know, in third world nations where, you know, everybody's getting their palms greased. And, you know, so don't leave the continent or you won't be safe. But this can happen anywhere in the world, right?
Sure. We hear this this myth, frankly, this moral panic about there being a huge explosion of sex trafficking around these events every year in the U.S., particularly around the Super Bowl. Inevitably, we have another one of those sort of task forces and people hiring consultants and so on. But then we see the same thing, that there is not really any traffickers caught, very few people. But what does happen is that sex workers get arrested. And sometimes if they're undocumented, that means that they could be put in ICE custody. And so we get, again, this pattern of collateral damage. And sometimes as people, you know, they want the department funding increase or they want the consulting gig. And so we get these numbers that are really inflated. And so one of my really eye-opening examples was at the Dallas Super Bowl. They were saying, oh, we'll have 50,000 girls will be trafficked from Mexico over the border.
Wow.
And then that number sort of inflated to 100,000, which the Global Alliance Against Traffic in Women pointed out, that's enough for every man, woman, and child in the Super Bowl stadium to have their own underage Mexican prostitute. Like, the numbers here are not adding up. And in the end, the FBI had to come forward and very embarrassedly said, we didn't find any. And so there's a lot of money that gets thrown at this that, frankly, I think could be spent finding actual sexual exploitation. Yeah. Within the sex industry, rather than just seizing on these events because, you know, it seems like it makes intuitive sense. Oh, there's a big event. But they really have gone off the rails with it. I think my favorite example is, if you recall, there was a solar eclipse a few years ago, 2017, I think it was, slicing across a narrow band of the country. And the attorneys general in three states, I think it was Kentucky, Wyoming, and I'm forgetting the other, started getting all this money to run anti-trafficking awareness programs and saying traffickers were going to come to the area, and during this, you know, 3 minutes of darkness, we're going to be potentially abducting people's children. And I thought, that makes no sense whatsoever. but there is this idea that this is a good opportunity to jump on. And I just think, you know, there are actual problems that money could be spent on in those places. And then, of course, it's also more recently been co-opted by conspiracy theorists and QAnon and other people who, you know, are promoting these falsehoods about trafficking, which, again, I have to keep saying, there is exploitation in the sex industry. It's just not correlated with these particular events. And there's an increasing amount of misinformation, urban legends, things on Facebook, things on TikTok that are really spreading a lot of harmful misinformation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, and I'm not a law enforcement person, but I'm thinking even in the drug industry, I mean, there's distribution everywhere, and certain people are going to take advantage of certain venues, especially when there's a lot of people. But I'm thinking this is sex trafficking has got to be a fairly well-organized industry. But I'm always thinking that this is done by a very a group, I want to say, for lack of a better term, these underground people who are not attending these big events where there's a lot of publicity, there's a lot of eyes and ears all over the place. As you said, going into vulnerable parts of the world, even here in the United States, every city in America has, you know, areas where less fortunate people, through maybe no fault of their own, are out there as prostitutes or whatever, pimps, whatever it may be. But these people get wrapped up through those means, if I'm following you more correctly, which is where we're not shedding enough light, where we're not focusing, and they're able to basically get away without anybody seeing anything, hearing anything, or pointing a finger. So correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds as if, you know, our most vulnerable parts of our cities, our towns, our regions across the globe, that's really where it's proliferating.
Well, a lot of the misinformation, frankly, comes from the fact that very stereotypical, very melodramatic depictions are what get put out there for the media. People think of, you know, young girls change of radiators, or they think of movies like Liam Neeson's Taken series, when in reality, a lot of people who are trafficked, particularly across borders, whether that's to the U.S. or other national borders, are actually trafficked by people they know. Mm. Sometimes it's family members.
Wow.
In fact, very often it's family members.
Wow.
So if you know, you have a cousin who has gone and she's selling sex, and she'll say, well, you know what, I'm making all this money and it's not great. I wish that I had better working conditions, but you should come and do this. And so they'll sometimes help to facilitate those things. So very often it is people that they know, and it's very complicated in terms of what that exploitation looks like. And I should also say that the government is willing to throw a lot of money, the U.S. government is willing to throw a lot of money at sex trafficking because nobody wants to be seen as being pro-sex trafficking.
Right.
So Democrats and Republicans can all agree, all right, we're going to put money toward that. But when we think about something like labor trafficking, that they can't get on the same page about because that would require comprehensive immigration reform.
Mm.
And part of the danger there is that sexual exploitation really can happen in that labor trafficking sector as well. So if you have an undocumented migrant woman who is picking your tomatoes and strawberries, she can and often is sexually exploited, sexually assaulted by foremen or by other people in those labor camps and facilities.
Mm.
But because we have such a narrow focus on this very sensationalized image, people like her would very often be left out of this. And so I think that's another important aspect. And I think it's one we'll see a lot more because your listeners might not be aware, but the FIFA Men's World Cup after the one in Doha this month is going to be in North America. And so it's going to be spread across, I don't have it in front of me, 14 or 16 cities in the U.S., as well as 2 cities in Canada and 3 cities in Mexico. And so there's going to be a lot of, I think, media attention. The World Cup goes on for about 32 days.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be, I think we'll probably see a lot of hype, a lot of police departments and consulting firms asking for money, trying to, look into this. And I really worry that what we'll also see is a lot of raids, a lot of deportations. We'll see a lot of women exploited or otherwise who are arrested and deported despite the fact that they may be victims. And so that's something that I'm actually already seeing from some of the big anti-trafficking organizations saying World Cup, USA, it's coming. We need to start now.
Yeah, it is scary. It almost brings a dark cloud over an event that, as you said, we should be putting more focus other places. It was interesting because, and we don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to throw this in because you're right. I remember reading, and I don't want to point a finger at any one country, but there are countries in this planet where, as you said, family members, fathers and mothers may indeed, put their daughters and sons, primarily probably more daughters, into the sex trafficking industry because, in turn, she'll be doing good for the family, sending something back. So I guess as crazy as, if you and I were sitting here as we are tonight, talking to a group of locals, they'd be appalled. But in some nations, and correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, this is kind of like understood that, hey, this is how it is. You got to help the family, and this is one way where we can be assured of a steady flow of money to help the family.
Sure.
And they just, as you said, family members can very, very easily be the targets or be the ones, not the targets, but the catalyst for all of this. In the closing few moments that we have, I got to ask you this question. Is there, based on your research, based on your travels, is there any one country that really stands out where sex trafficking is really an epidemic?
Well, we know that there was quite a bit coming from Thailand, but that seems to have shifted in more recent years, fortunately, and kind of calmed down. I think there are a lot of issues in Russia. I encountered a lot of Russian and Ukrainian sex workers who had very clearly had, managers who were arranging their travel. And they were working at the very high end of the industry, I should say, sort of high-end escorting. That doesn't mean that they, didn't have, pimps managing all of that. And so I saw a lot of that in Russia, although in Russia, the police are so closely involved in these things that really none of the brothels and venues where the women work can do so without the involvement of these corrupt police. And so that was one place where, unfortunately, I did see that. And in Qatar, which is hosting the World Cup, they certainly have a lot of labor trafficking. I should hasten to add, viewers will be watching potentially the World Cup, which starts Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
6,500 men, mostly from Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, North Korea, have died building those stadiums, essentially worked to death in the heat. And so you have, you know, a 16-year-old boy died of a heart attack after a couple of months, which, you know, really is just not normal. So there's a lot of labor trafficking there. They make very, very little money. But again, as you pointed out, their families really need those remittances sent home. And so even though it's terribly exploitative, that's there. But there really is, you know, blood in the ground if you're looking at those stadiums. And so, again, I think, you know, we are served better by thinking about bigger pictures about trafficking instead of only focusing in on whatever the most sensational sexualized or titillating example is, because it's a whole system of oppression.
Yeah. And I'm sure over the years it's been, you know, they've got this, you know, those who are involved in the trafficking certainly have a system. They work cooperatively because let's be honest, there's a ton of money being flowing from one to the other. And, you know, those who are reaping the benefits are certainly not going to let a good thing in their eyes go. So as you said, the focus should be shifted so that, you know, as we're watching big sporting events, not to think that, oh, you know, here's the Super Bowl. I wonder how many young people are being trafficked as the Dallas Cowboys and the New England Patriots are facing off. It really does sort of seem a little, you know, off kilter there, Greg. So I'm glad that the book helps to bring to light that there's a lot more to this, and there's another layer, and you know, and it's up to governments across the globe, and it's up to law enforcement. Quickly though, the book is a great read, Panics Without Borders. But if people want to just pose questions to you, maybe find out more information about the research that you did for the book, is the way they can reach out to you directly?
Yeah, they can. If you go to gregorymitchell.net, that's my website, which has links to the book, which is available in paperback on Amazon and, you know, various other places. Many of my research papers are also there, which they can download and read for free. My contact information is also there if someone did want to reach out to me via email. Then you can find all of that at that website, gregorymitchell.net.
And they could even, as part of the faculty at Williams College, they could reach out to you that way as well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. And so that email is gcm1@williams.edu. But again, they can find that on the website, but gcm1@williams.edu. Yeah.
The book, Panics Without Borders, is, to describe it from my own perspective, enlightening beyond belief, frightening to a large extent, and that's not what Greg's intent was. What I'm saying is the subject matter, what's happening to other human beings across the globe, is just something that, you know, most of us don't wake up to have to deal with, and yet many, many people, millions across the globe, are very much involved as pawns in the sex trafficking industry. Again, the book is Panics Without Borders, How Global Sporting Events Drives the Myth About Sex Traffickers. So it's a great read. Again, I want to thank my guest this week, author and educator from Williams College, Greg Mitchell. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you.